Welcome in. I'm your host, Will Gray, and on today's edition of the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade, I'm going to be joined by Golf Channel senior writer Ryan Lavner as we look back at a wild finish in the desert, Lee Westwood turning back the hands of time in Abu Dhabi, and we take a shot at trying to preview Tiger Woods' first competitive shots of 2020. But first, welcome to the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade and the all-new Sim Driver. The driver head was in need of a drastic change in order to provide more performance, so TaylorMade changed the shape altogether with their new Sim Driver, which allowed them to make it fast and forgiving where every golfer needs it, the downswing. The pros love the new shape, but the biggest reason TaylorMade changed the shape was to help make you into a better golfer. Check out TaylorMadeGolf.com for more information on the all-new Sim family. And with that, Ryan Lavner, welcome in. Let's talk shop here. What was your biggest takeaway from the action on Sunday? You can go early with Westwood. You can go late with Andrew Landry kind of going on both sides of the spectrum there. What was your biggest takeaway?
On Sunday, it was Lee Westwood winning. I think everyone thought that Bernd Wiesberger would win, and Westwood looked so solid. I mean, it looked like it was 2005 all over again. His iron play is just as impressive as it ever was, and even with a putter in which he can literally shove the putter into the cup
and extract
the ball from it. It was just a vintage performance from Westwood. He's now back inside the top 30 in the world. He's exempt for majors. And even the Ryder Cup is now on the potential docket, which is amazing to think for a 46-year-old.
Between John Smoltz having his putter stand up for him as he lined up shots at the Diamond Resorts, and then you've got Lee Westwood scooping the ball out on the 72nd hole.
What an image.
With his putter. I did not know really what to think. But you're right. Everything's on the table right now. I mean, everyone talked last summer about Westwood sneaking into one more Masters with his finish at Royal Portrush. Everyone thought, oh, this is nice. He's going to get one more send-off with the top four there. And all of a sudden, he's in all the majors. He's going to be there for a while based on his current world ranking. And he seems to have found something after a few really, frankly, lost years. This is a guy that we've seen do this before. He's had great stretches. He's had rough stretches. And now he appears to be on the cusp of some more.
I wonder if it's almost like the expectations for him are gone. Like he had his girlfriend on the bag. I think he even said as much that he thought the 2018 Ryder Cup, where he was a assistant captain, that was kind of his send off. He's not going to play. He's already played 10 Ryder Cups. He didn't really want to play anymore. He had given up hope that he was going to win a major championship. And now it just seems like he's freewheeling it. There's no pressure on him. No one's expectations. And here he is playing, you know, some of the best golf of his career. If you're the European team, if you're Padraig Harrington, do you want him on the Ryder Cup team?
No, of course you don't.
It is still a putting competition.
It is. Here's the thing. No one had more fun in Paris than Lee Westwood.
Exactly.
Yeah. He was right where he needed to be. He's putting on the shades in the back room, kind of helping Thomas Bjorn out with the picks and the pairings and everything like that. He doesn't have to make any four-foot putts with everyone watching.
That was so brutal to watch.
That's right where he needs to be. But you're right. If he continues to play at this level,
what if he qualifies on his own? Does he? I mean, do they try and hide him?
I don't know. I mean, it's. I guess you.
I actually think Whistling Straits would be a good ballpark for him.
It could be, but it's certainly not a question you expected to have to deal with.
No.
3 weeks ago.
No.
And now it's very much on the table. We shall see.
He's always good at Augusta too.
So he is. He is. Let's look at the U.S. side of things, and it was a bit of a crazy finish out in Palm Springs. Andrew Landry builds a six-shot lead, does his best to blow the six-shot lead. He's tied with Honest Abe Answer, and then he hits two very clutch shots on 17 and 18 to get back and win a tournament that he almost won a couple years ago, and one that seemed like it was his to lose, certainly on Sunday.
Yeah, I love what Andrew Landry said after. Look, and he's 5'7", he's 150 pounds. Very slight guy. He wasn't great at Arkansas. He was a 3-time All-American, but it wasn't like he was a world beater. But I love what he said afterward. He said, "I know that I'm only going to be in contention 1 to 3 times a season. That is it. That is such a low bar." He says, "But the key for him is to capitalize when he is in that position, and he did it. You have to give him credit. 3 bogeys in a row. Honest Abe Answer was making a charge. Scotty Scheffler, who I absolutely love. I hope we get to talk about him.
Oh, well, we will.
He makes eagle on 16. He looks like he's potentially going to tie the lead. And it's Landry throwing absolute darts on 17 and 18. Some of the most visually intimidating holes you could possibly find on the planet. That was so clutch. And for a guy who just wants to get into contention, expects to get in contention just 1 to 3 times. To be able to win one of those is exceptional. It's now his second win, and you know he's back in Augusta and a whole lot of other things.
I was gonna say he's 1 for 1 this year. That's all he needs. He's good for another couple of years in the exemption. And there's a large portion of the PGA Tour membership that I'm sure takes that mentality, or maybe they should. Even Tiger talked last year, kind of on a different, certainly a different plane, but he said, listen, if I play 12 or 13 times, I might play good 3 or 4, and of those 3 or 4, if I get one across the finish line, that's going to be a good year. That's a pretty good way to like kind of go about things.
Not just to be a Georgia homer. I feel like that's how like Brian Harmon thinks.
Can we just check what's the tail of the tape? We had, I think, 5 minutes and 12 seconds before you got a Bulldog.
But Brian Harmon had said that for years. Like, there's certain ballparks he's just not going to play well at.
Right.
Yet he's still going to show up because he's got a minimum number of PGA Tour starts he needs to make. Hey,
because you never know.
He can finish in the top 25 and then just move on to the next week. But he knows there's going to be certain times and certain courses where everything comes together and he has a chance to contend. And for Andrew Landry to pull it out, especially the way that he did, I think he can take a lot more out of it than if he just won, you know, by 4 shots.
And I do think it's interesting whenever you see guys who, you know, have that journeyman tag and then they break through for a victory. And sometimes that's validation and it leads to bigger and better things. You see what's happened with Brendan Todd this past fall where everything kind of goes downhill. Another Georgia guy. There you go. That was a freebie. Or you see other guys where now that just raises the bar and that it increases the pressure on themselves. And they spend the next 2 years of that exemption forcing for win number 2. And sometimes that can go both ways. Landry now has a second one, and we'll see where things go.
What did you make of Phil? This is the tournament host didn't even make it to Sunday. He said he was going to hit bombs.
Yes.
Which I do not want to hear ever again.
And he
was. I mean, he was top 10 in driving distance for much of the week. And it doesn't matter.
Yes.
He shot 3 under par in an absolute shootout.
Yes.
And missed the cut by a mile.
So my question that I was going to ask you, I'll answer and then you can take it. But I'm wondering who is closer to the panic button, Phil or Bryson? Because both got off to an inauspicious start this past week. I think it's probably
got to be Phil.
Phil. Because yes. Bryson at least is going to be able to figure it out.
The thing about Bryson, so there's a couple things, obviously.
Yes.
The first is that I tend to give Bryson the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
Because he's always been unconventional. He's always done things his own way, and yet you know he's going to outwork himself, and he's going to figure it out eventually because he has a track record of doing so. The curious thing about Bryson, of course, is that he was just starting to play good golf in the fall. He'd had kind of just a middling season until that point, and then you get to the fall and he finishes T4 in Vegas, and he says, "Yep, I'm going to blow it up. And I'm going to go pack on 25 pounds in the next 2 months." And obviously, your swing changes.
Yeah.
Like, it just has to. And so I think he'll eventually figure it out. I don't think he'll do it this week in Dubai, where last year he shot 24 under par and won by 7. I do have faith that Bryson will eventually figure it out because he always does. Phil, it's like he's a kid. Like, he's just chasing distance. He's chasing the next shiny toy. Why, approaching 50, are you chasing speed and distance when you know with 25 plus years of experience that it's more than that on the PGA Tour?
So here's my take on Phil. I don't have an answer to your question there you posed. It's a very valid point. But I look at it, listen, as you know, I enjoy a friendly wager from time to time. Phil.
Degenerate.
Cut from a similar cloth, just a friendly wager. So he feels like someone right now who's on tilt. If you're sitting there at a table and you're hanging out, you're treading water with your money, and then all of a sudden you start losing a few hands in a row and you start putting more in and you bet more, you go, and all of a sudden in the blink of an eye all your chips disappear and you're left, you know, trying to figure out how you're going to get the mortgage check in the mail in the first. He has started a slide last year, and now all of a sudden you saw it at Port Rush or over the summer. He's like, I'm going to reach for the most, maybe not eccentric, but the wildest solution. I'm going to drop not 10 pounds. I'm going to drop 40 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm not going to swing.
He looks great.
I'm not going to swing a little bit harder. I'm going to swing way harder. I'm going to swing out of my shoes on every drive and then figure it out where it goes from there. And I agree with you in terms of the Phil and Bryson stuff. That Bryson has been outside the box, but he has his reasons for doing so. Phil, I feel like, is trying to throw a few things against the wall, hope that one of them sticks, and is the thing that's going to turn around his golf game, because this past summer has been one of deep introspection for him, where he said, listen, I came out and I didn't have the answers for 4, 5, 6 months in a row, which is the first time
he
has ever said that about his golf game. And you're right, he still doesn't. He's down to 79th in the world. He's not in the U.S. Open right now, which I'm sure he would get.
He's not in the WGC.
He's
WGCs.
That's the thing. He's not in the WGCs. Everyone is asking me about his schedule. 2 years ago, he won Mexico. He's probably not going to play this year because he's not going to qualify. So he's got this four-event stretch right now where if he's 0-1, let's say. If he goes...
hasn't played well at Torrey Pines in a decade.
And if he goes...
Then he's skipping Phoenix, where he seemingly always plays well.
And if he only has one good event out of these next four, where is he going to be at mentally? Where is he going to be able to draw confidence from? Because we so often see him as a guy who goes on momentum rides in both directions. Right now, it's moving down. He needs something to flip the switch.
It's trickling down into the rest of his game, too. Like, he was more erratic last year than he's ever been in his entire career, which is really saying something because he's always hit it off the planet.
Yes.
And so that's trickling down to his iron game, which is trickling down to his wedge game. He was 180th in scramming last year with one of the worst putting seasons that he's ever had. Yeah. So it's like it's infiltrating the rest of his game. And it's just a bizarre thing for him to be chasing at this age. Like, if you're about to turn 50, you would think you would do what Tiger has done, which is kind of find an off-speed pitch, make sure you get in the fairway, and then kind of accentuate the gifts that you still do have. Phil's gifts normally are iron play and play around the green, on and around the greens. That has just been totally disregarded for just this insane swing from the heels distance chase. I don't get it, and I don't see it turning around anytime soon.
Well, he's going to get another shot this week at Torrey Pines. Decorated field. You mentioned Tiger. He is also going to be there. Justin Rose, defending champ. John Rahm, former champion.
Roars.
Coming back. Rory McIlroy after a good...
Spieth.
Spieth. We almost threw him into that discussion with Bryson and Phil. But yes, we will see Jordan Spieth. But we have to start with T-Dub. This is the first official race for 83. Get your logos ready. The first time for him to potentially break that tie he has with Sam Snead, having won his most recent official PGA Tour start way back in, what was that, October?
It was October.
It's been a while. So this is a course where he has won before in memorable fashion. This is not a course where Tiger Woods has had much success since that victory all the way back in 2013. That was many surgeries ago, procedures ago. That was a Masters title ago. What are your thoughts? What are your expectations for this week, and specifically what he can do on the South Course, which almost feels like it's getting a bit too burly for even Tiger Woods?
Yeah, my expectations are very much tempered. You mentioned 2013 as his last win at Torrey Pines. He hasn't won there besides that since 08.
Right.
I mean, that's a lifetime ago. 12 years. I mean, Rory McIlroy was just beginning his pro career at that stage. It's hard to even say, oh, this is one of his favorite hunting grounds. It used to be.
Right.
I don't think it is anymore. I do think it's a good place for him to start his season, just because it is a championship test. He's going to see how his body feels in what's probably going to be mid-50s weather. It's just a good place to get started rather than Riviera, where he's got tournament duties and it's a course he's never won on. At least he has some good vibes around Torrey Pines. Since 2013, his best finish is T20.
Yeah,
I think right around there would be a realistic expectation. Ease into the new year. I think back in Tiger's prime, he came out ready to go in his first start, and for whatever reason, maybe it's his body, maybe it's the fact that he's single father now with two kids, the holidays were just around the corner, his priorities are elsewhere at the turn of the year. I think that's perfectly fine, because he's looking at the second week in April and not necessarily the third week in January.
Yeah. T23 and T20 the last 2 years, and both those times were where he was kind of floating around 45th and made a little bit of a run on Sunday. So I think, around that top 25 barometer would be good. But I think this is interesting, as you said. You had the win in 13. Till then, you go back to that playoff against Rocco in 08. This is kind of like when you go back to your favorite college bar after a few years, and you have all those memories that are there, and it was a wonderful time.
But they're starting to get hazy.
But you look around, and you're like, things look a little different. This doesn't quite have the same feel that it once was. I'm not the same person that I once was. Yes. And we do have to talk a little bit about some of these changes, because now, amazingly, we're talking about next year. This course is going to host the U.S. Open. And it's going to certainly look very different in June in the USGA's hands than it does in January in the PGA Tour's hands. But there have been some changes to a few of the holes. The fourth hole along the coast there got a little bit more meat on it. And so, it's too early to be saying, oh, I'm playing to prepare for a major 18 months down the road. But this course is certainly always in that discussion of among the hardest and most demanding tests.
Only thing working in Tiger's favor this week, I believe, is the fact that his driver finally seems like it's under control. I think 2 years ago, I covered that tournament, and he was spraying it everywhere. Yeah. I mean, hitting less than half of his fairway, which you think would be just a death sentence on the South course. And yet he still gutted out a top 25 finish. He's so much more under control, able to shape it both ways off the tee. Now, I think, yes, it is the longest course that you're going to find on the PGA Tour schedule, but I think he's better equipped now to handle it. Now, do I think that means he's going to have a top five finish this week? No, I don't, because I think there's other demands. I'm not expecting he's going to be particularly sharp. However, I'm curious to see his driver, most importantly, because I think he was really good at the Zozo and at Royal Melbourne. I mean, he was just a tactician off the tee, and I would love to see that continue, because that was a lot of fun to watch.
That place drew the best out of him.
Yeah.
That was fun. All right, so you mentioned top five. I got three guys here who were all top five last year. Justin Rose won, John Rahm, T5, and as I said, he won a couple years ago, and Rory was T5. Who of those three are you most excited to see this week?
Most excited to see Rory. For sure, did not turn up at Kapalua this year, unlike in 2019, to kind of get his Player of the Year campaign started.
Could get to number one this week.
Could do it with a win this week. Brooks Koepka could probably take it back, depending on how he plays the following week in Saudi Arabia. But Rory hasn't been world number one since September 2015. Yeah. I mean, we talked about Tiger a lifetime ago. That was a really long time ago for Rory. He wasn't even married at that time. But yeah, I'm excited to see him. I think all three of those guys are going to play well again. I mean, Justin Rose coming off a runner-up finish in Singapore. He got a full day's worth of rest, traveling traveling to La Jolla. And John Rahm has been just on an absolute tear the last 6 to 9 months. One of those guys is going to win. I'm not particularly sure who, but...
You think one of those three guys wins this week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Who do you think?
I think I would, if you give me the field against those three, I'm definitely going to take the field. I think that it's an unpredictable course.
Those are the three favorites.
Yes, but I think that this is a course where sometimes you need to go a little bit deeper down the list, although this has been a place where it's been very top-heavy, and you look at the winners from recent years. You have Rahm, you have Rose, Jason Day's won twice, back when Jason Day was a factor, back when he was the thing. He's making his first start since pulling out of the President's Cup, by the way. It has trended a little bit top heavy, but I still think that this course is unpredictable enough that I would take
give us a name
with the other ones. How about Woodland? This is a place where he has played well before. He's contended through 36, 54 holes, three straight top 20s, actually four as I'm looking at my notes here. And I could see him really thriving on, certainly, it's a little cliche, but U.S. Open winner on a U.S. Open golf course. Go for it. So I think that
I've seen worse picks. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think
doesn't feel like a Scott Stallings year.
You never know when the Scott Stallings years are coming, but I would say no, just because the strength of this field. This is one that has had a little bit of ebbs and flows, but this week we've really got a lot of star power.
Yeah,
a lot of
the top 10. It feels like the unofficial start to the season. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would think that maybe not three favorites down the list, but if you go five or eight, that's where you might get a winner.
Jordan Spieth, top 25 finish, yes or no?
No.
Miscut, yes or no? Otherwise, he's going to be languishing T26 to T63.
He can put up like a 68 on the North course and do enough to get by, to get past.
He might need more than a 68 on the North course to get by.
We'll see. So I'm not optimistic of Spieth finding it immediately out of the gate. I think that potentially at sometime in the spring things could click, but right now he's another guy who is on the cusp of potentially playing himself out of some WGCs, which is mind-boggling to think about.
Yeah, what's he? He's 43. He's top. He's top 45 right now.
But Austin's not a lock. A
couple more missed cuts, and it's starting to get.
As we saw with Phil, I mean, he was right at that top 50 cutoff at the end of the year. They were talking about his 26-year streak, and all of a sudden he's heading down to 80 with a bullet. So those points start to bleed pretty quickly unless you put up a top 10 finish and get him going back in the right direction.
I mean, he's had so much time to work on his game now. Yes, he played the Hero. That was roughly 6 weeks ago. Yeah. Before that, he hadn't played since playing in Korea. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you haven't figured it out by now, if you struggle out of the gates at a course that's obviously going to demand some precision off the tee, which has been his bugaboo for the past 18 to 24 months. If he doesn't show up with at least his B game this week, it's probably already past time, but it's definitely time to question if he's actually going down the right path. If he shows up this week and totally lays an egg, I mean, you got to ask What are we doing here?
How often are you working on the same thing, saying the same things, and going out and having the same repeated results in a negative way? And I'm not really sure what the best answer would be for a revamped path for him, but at some point you do sometimes get to a stage where it's like, I just need to try something different. Take the change out of your right pocket, put in your left. I don't know what that answer is going to be for him, but he's definitely one of those guys that's coming out. You want to have that freedom and the liberty, like you said, the Tiger has, to kick the rust off and play your way into the season. And there's a little bit more of sense of urgency with a guy like Spieth, who is so driven off of having success, and that motivates him, and it flows so well from one high finish to the next. Even last year, the very little stretch of really good golf he played, he put three straight top tens together. He's able to go from one to the next and string things together once it gets going. But it's a matter of what's going to be that flash in the pan to get it to turn around for him.
Yeah, and it was probably a good thing. He pulled out of the Sony because he had a cold. His manager said he didn't want to risk it on the long flight getting a little bit worse. It's probably a good thing he didn't turn up at Wailea with 45-mile-an-hour winds. Yeah. Gave him a little bit more time to work on his game. I hope he shows up this week at Torrey and just has some signs of optimism because PGA Tour is so much more fun if Jordan Spieth is in the mix.
So I realized I neglected to give you Scottie Scheffler time earlier. Oh. So in lieu of that, I will give you some Colin Morikawa time because he's playing this week with Tiger Woods and Jon Rahm in one of the featured groups. What are your thoughts on Morikawa, who a year ago is in college, and now all of a sudden he's a PGA Tour winner playing next to Tiger in a pretty prestigious event?
I'm hoping he can make a nice little impression on Tiger, who can then relay his findings to 2020 Ryder Cup captain Steve Stricker.
It's not an
impossibility that he could be on that team as probably a captain's pick.
Yes.
You don't think this could potentially be a nice showcase event for him?
I think it could, but I think that you're never going to make Ryder Cup captain's picks decisions based on how someone played in January.
No, but I don't think Steve Stricker's been poring over footage from college or even Colin Morikawa's last.
Right, but outside of winning this tournament, I don't think that this week will have any bearing whatsoever on whether or not Colin Morikawa makes it.
I could see if Morikawa throws a back-to-back 67s, I could see Tiger shooting Strix a text and saying, "Well, this Morikawa dude.
What
he
do
can
you
really
think?"
Play.
All right, first we need to figure out what's Tiger's Colin Morikawa nickname. Calls?
Ooh, yes.
It's Calls.
It's not Mori.
No.
It's not Mori.
We need an S in there. It's going to be Calls. Okay, so he says Strix.
I like that.
Strix, I like Calls.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a little ambitious. This is, I mean, the Westwood stuff threw me for a loop to begin with, but I understand that's a little bit grounded. But maybe it's just because we're excited to be in a Ryder Cup year again.
Could we get
to go back down the road. I still need to get let's get through Augusta, and then we can start crunching some numbers and seeing where things stand.
Then we got to look at the Olympics once you get past Augusta. Yes. If we can't talk about Ryder Cup,
We can talk Olympics, that's for sure. but yes, it should be an interesting week, though. We've got, as you said, Bryson defending in Dubai, but I think a lot of eyes are going to be on not only Tiger, but this stacked field at Torrey Pines, a showcase week, and of course it's going to host a major next year. And as you said, very much feels like the unofficial start of the 2020 season.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been gifted a lot of good action already with Justin Thomas winning in Kapalua, and we've had kind of dicey finishes the last couple weeks on the PGA Tour. Westwood breaking through. It's been a good start. I think we'll get another big name winner this week. I really do. I think this is probably a John Rahm.
Listen,
if
it's one of your three guys, I will come in next week. I will tip my hat to you, and we shall see. But I think that the stars are going to shine this week for sure, whether you go 5, 10, 8 deep, whatever. But you've got your three Euros. I like your chances. We'll see.
We got Rex Hoggard out there for us. He'll be joining us on the show next week for his musings from the week at Torrey Pines. Probably some fish tacos at
Brigantine's.
Brigantine's as well.
Yes. Brigantine's fish taco is a must.
Unbeatable.
On the Torrey Pines beat.
If nothing else, for the people watching.
We really need to incorporate into this podcast a Ryan Labner food segment because you're the go-to
guy. I'm fine.
So
I'm fine doing, so I'm fine doing
this,
that.
We can keep this going. But Brigantine's, if you're in San Diego Del Mar, that's definitely the spot.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that seems like a good place to end this edition. As you said, we'll be back next week to recap the week that was at the Farmers in Dubai, as well as we'll bring in Rex for some thoughts, and we'll preview the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which will be coming up next week. But for now, Ryan Labner, I'm your host, Will Gray. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to this edition of the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade. We'll see you next time.